This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way.
I'm Molly.
And I'm Matthew.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and shake and sprinkle it on whatever else we're eating.
And that's because this week we're talking about furikake.
Furikake. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
I really enjoy saying, you know, obviously my American pronunciation of the Japanese R. I find it satisfying, kind of slapping the roof of my mouth with my tongue.
No, I think it sounds pretty good.
Oh, thank you.
So should we define furikake first, or should we do memory lane first?
Let's define it first.
Okay. So furikake is a Japanese sprinkle seasoning, not unlike shichimi togarashi, which we did a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. But furikake is especially made to go on rice, and it always has some crunchy bits in it and something sea flavored. Like dried fish or seaweed or both.
Right. You know, when you say Japanese sprinkle seasoning, it makes me think about what American sprinkle seasonings we have because...
Right. We talked about this last time, I think. Like, we talked about, like, Lowry's seasoning salt.
Did we talk about Mrs. Dash?
Yeah.
Molly McButter? Molly McButter, those are like butter buds.
Those are like butter buds. But I think... but I mean, yeah, that's a sprinkle seasoning.
It's interesting, though, because I don't think of a sprinkle seasoning in American culture being something that is out on the table while you're eating. I mean, I know that actually all the things we're talking about would be out on the table while you're eating. But they're not as integrated into the like average American dining table situation as furikake or shichimi togarashi.
Yeah, that's true. Another one came. Oh, is cinnamon sugar a sprinkle seasoning, do you think?
I don't call it a seasoning. I feel like it's a spice.
Yeah. Cinnamon sugar is a spice. Interesting.
There's no real word for what cinnamon sugar is, just itself.
Okay. So
anyway.
All right. So do you have any furikake memory lane?
I do. I think that the first time I encountered it was certainly at a Japanese restaurant in one of the little, like, you know, cylindrical glass jars, usually next to the togarashi. The togarashi would have like an orange plastic lid, I think, and the furikake would have a green one.
Yeah.
Does this sound
familiar? The green one is also often aonori, which is like finely powdered ground seaweed.
Okay.
But it could be either one.
So I think that's where I first encountered it. And honestly, I don't know that I ever picked it up and used it. I think I probably picked it up and sniffed it. But I think that...
It sounds like you.
It does sound like me. I pick up everything and sniff it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think that I probably first really understood...
When I take you out for your walk, I'm always having to say, don't pick that up and sniff it. No.
Yeah, and then you swap me across the nose with a newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
Do people still do that to their dogs?
I mean, I hope not.
I hope not either. Anyway, I think that going to Tokyo with you in the fall of 2017 was probably the first time that I really understood how much I loved furikake. Prior to that, I didn't understand how much I loved furikake. I was constantly mystified by my love for it.
Well, no. I think if people haven't yet picked up a copy of your new book, The Fixed Stars, it's all about how you came to understand your love for furikake
exactly.
And whether it was like in there all along.
Yeah. I mean, is one born with a love for furikake? Or can it change over a lifetime?
This book, which is a very good and mostly very serious book, makes such a versatile punchline.
It really does. You are welcome. Anyway, so now I always keep furikake in the house. I even have a little designated container for it.
Oh, what does it look like?
It's the one that I bought at the Togarashi shop.
Of course.
In Asakusa. Yes. Anyway, it's a clear plastic little cylinder. It's maybe 4 inches tall with a little lid that's got a flip top. And we actually have this funny little silver dish that used to be my grandmother's or something that we always keep the Togarashi and the furikake in. And it sits on a shelf with our rice in the cabinet. And we pull it down whenever we're having rice or anything else vaguely Japanesey.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah. Okay, so my memory lane maybe goes back to 2017. There you go.
Yeah, honestly, I don't know if I was really aware of furikake before I started traveling to Japan either. Like, I definitely remember it from my first big trip in 2012, but I know I had probably encountered it before that, maybe like on an onigiri or something like that, mm-hmm. but I don't think I would have known what it was called. Mm-hmm. And that's, relates to the history of furikake because it didn't actually settle into that name until relatively recently as far as ancient foods go.
Oh, well, perhaps you'd like to tell me the history.
I would love to.
Great.
Okay, so furikake does not have as ancient a history as shichimi togarashi, which we talked about, the spicy spice blend that goes back to, I think we said, like the 17th century.
Mm-hmm, that sounds right.
So furikake really started as a nutritional supplement. And it was one of these things like how, when you learn about the history of Coca-Cola, like it was invented by a pharmacist to be like a health drink. And then only much later did people realize, oh, this is very tasty and is the opposite of a health drink.
Uh-huh.
And furikake, not that it's like unhealthy in the same way as soda, but it was originally billed as a calcium supplement. And it was developed by a pharmacist in Kumamoto in Kyushu named Yoshimaru Suikichi. And the original product was made with sesame, poppy seeds, seaweed, and fish bones, like ground fish bones.
Oh, okay.
And it was called Gohan no Tomo, which means friend of rice.
Oh, that's so sweet.
And you can still buy that brand today.
Have you had it?
I have not had it, but it's it comes in a very nice-looking plastic sleeve and still advertises in big bold letters on the package, like it says CA for calcium.
Wow. So I wonder what the fishbone, obviously they add a lot of calcium, but I wonder what they do in terms of flavor. Because, so for one thing, I mean, I think that when we talk about furikake, similar to togarashi, but even more so, we're talking about a wide variety of actual flavor blends here.
Yes, absolutely.
And the ones that I've had that had fish flakes in them, for me, taste-wise, were so different from the ones I'd had that didn't have fish flakes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that instead just had seaweed. I wouldn't even use them in the same places. So it's fascinating to think of what it would taste like with fish bones.
So I don't think I've had that variety, but I have an idea of what it would be like because I have eaten quite a lot of crispy fried fish bones mm-hmm. in Japan. It's called hone senbei, and which means like senbei, like rice crackers, but in this case, it's bone crackers.
Mm.
And so like, especially like an eel, which has like a long but thin backbone, after you fillet the eel and grill the fillets, like you will fry the backbone, and it gets really crispy and salty and like not super intense fish flavored, but definitely noticeably so.
You have a great story about your child eating fried eel backbone in Pretty Good Number One.
I do. You want me to tell the story now?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. So back on our first trip to Japan in 2012, teenager of the show, Iris, who was then not quite a teenager. They were eight. We went to our favorite tempura shop, now sadly closed, called Tenta. The Iris's favorite thing there was the crispy eel backbone, which after the chef would fillet and fry the saltwater eel, he would tie the backbone into an overhand knot and toss it into the fryer, not breaded, just like fried, super crispy, and Iris would eat it. And so, like, the last time we went, I think before we left Tokyo, we ordered the freshwater eel, and the chef presented it to Iris, and Iris picked it up with their chopsticks and promptly dropped it onto the floor, and we were like, oh no, this is that moment, like when the kid loses their ice cream. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like the saddest kid face you can possibly see. And the chef was like, no, hey, pick it up. Give it to me. And Iris was like, what? We were all like, what? And Iris picked it up and passed it back to the chef, who threw this eel bone from the floor back into the fryer and pulled it out and presented it back to Iris kind of with a flourish.
And
Iris ate it. So
I love it.
5-second rule. It applies cross-culturally around the world.
I'm so glad to know that.
So anyway, like if you crunch that up, it would be a great futakake ingredient.
Okay. So, all right. So like Coca-Cola, futakake started out as being a questionably marketed health supplement.
Right. And after World War II, so it was introduced at a time when nutrition was malnutrition was a very serious issue in Japan, like around after like World War I and during around the time of the Great Kanto earthquake. And then after World War II, Nissin Foods commercialized futakake on a large scale, and they billed it as a nutritional supplement that would turn rice into a complete meal.
Mm.
The name futakake didn't become the generic name for this type of seasoning until around 1959, when the National Futakake Association was established.
How can we become members?
I was thinking about that. I think we have to start a futakake business, but I don't know. It probably has to be located in Japan. It probably has to be like a business of a certain size. I don't know. We should look into this.
We should. Yeah. I mean, you know, when this podcast, you know, when it runs dry, Matthew, when we finally run out of things to talk about.
It's pretty dry.
It is pretty dry. When we finally run out of things to talk about, we're going to need a new line of work. So
I feel like we've had some pretty good business ideas along the way. I don't remember any of them. So let's go with joining the National Futakake Association.
Okay,
it sounds
great.
Like you just want them to bail us out when our futakake business inevitably fails.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Yeah, that sounds fine with me. Okay.
Yeah, so futakake, like I said, it's got to have something salty and something crispy. Other than that, kind of anything goes. And the simplest form of futakake is gomashio, which is just salt and sesame seeds. That's considered a futakake.
Okay, and that's what you mentioned as possibly being in one of the little glass cylinders I remember seeing in Japanese restaurants.
That is definitely a condiment that you see widely, like at ramen places. You'll very often see that.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
for example,
okay. Great.
There is a close relationship, I think, between futakake and ochazuke. Have you ever had ochazuke?
I don't think so.
We should do an episode.
So wait, what do you? Okay, wait, hold on. I'm reading the agenda. So packaged ochazuke, mm-hmm. Is that how? Okay, ochazuke mix is just futakake with a little green tea powder.
So ochazuke is a mixed rice dish where you take rice and you put some toppings on, like usually like some dried toppings like seaweed or dried fish, or it could be like some fresh fish, like some umeboshi, something like that. And then you pour tea on it.
Ah, okay. Okay.
And so it has like the flavor, like usually like a seaweed or fish flavor and a tea flavor. And it's very good and very like kind of like homey, like something you would eat like when you're recovering from being sick, mm-hmm. or just like a really like simple homey dish. But nowadays, like it's something that you can like whip up at work because you can get like an ochazuke packet that has all the seasonings you need, including the dried tea powder, and just add hot water. And there's also just like instant ochazuke in the same way there's like cup of noodles.
So do you ever purchase it, Wajimaya?
From time to time, I have a friend who really likes a particular brand from Japan, so I will often stock up on that and give it to her when I get back. It's not something I eat a lot. And if I were going to, I would probably toss on some furikake and then use some freshly brewed tea rather than the tea powder, which is not bad, but it's not as good as freshly made tea.
That sounds really good and really, I can understand how you would want it when you're like a little under the weather. It
yeah.
seems so soothing and yet like toasty and it sounds really good.
Yeah. Okay. Let's put it on the to-do list.
Okay, cool. So, okay, here's the thing when I think about furikake, though, now that we're in the middle of this episode, I realize that actually, Matthew, I think that of all the foods that I have eaten with you on the two trips we've been to Tokyo together, I don't think I've ever used furikake actually in Tokyo. I've just bought it and brought it home.
That's fine.
And then used it a bunch at home. Can we just backtrack for a second and say, like, what do you put it on in restaurants usually? Because, like, you know, you'd see it on a table or something there. What do you do with it?
I mean, I think of it, like, I don't use it much in restaurants. I think of it as being like a thing that you'd put on a bento, especially. So like if you'd go into a bento shop and like build your own bento, like there would definitely be furikake available to shake on there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I know I see it on tables and you're right. I don't use it as much as I use like a komashio, which is technically a furikake, or a shichimi togarashi, especially.
Yeah. I think about how much I loved using shichimi togarashi when we went out for udon, for instance,
yes.
using like shaking it into the broth and all that stuff, or using a little bit on ramen. But yeah, I don't think I used furikake there.
You know, so we're going to get to this, but you know, the place where you would find furikake like on every table more so than in Japan is in Hawaii. And I learned quite a bit about the role of furikake in Hawaiian cuisine. But let's set that aside for now. We'll get to that in a minute.
Wait, Matthew, it just occurred to me that we have not actually said what the word furikake means.
Oh, it means shake and sprinkle. That's my translation.
Is that also your life mantra?
It is also my life mantra. I try and like shake and sprinkle a little happiness on things wherever I go. I'm like Johnny Appleseed, but for some unspecified salty food powder.
That's exactly how I think of you.
Yeah.
My life has had so much less sprinkle and shaken happiness since I've been sitting alone in a closet talking with you instead of sitting with you in person.
No, and once you come over, like you're gonna be greeted with like just a shower of salty flakes.
Oh my God, it's gonna be like
in a Greek myth, right?
Oh, in a Greek myth, people get showered with salty flakes.
I think that's how Zeus sometimes appears and impregnates people.
Oh. God, please don't impregnate. Oh my God, I got so freaked out about that. I said impregnate. Please don't impregnate me with anything, Matthew.
You know what? Okay, I won't.
Okay, great. Woo!
This episode is brought to you by Town Place Suites by Marriott.
Whether you're traveling for work or just enjoying a relaxing week away, Town Place Suites by Marriott has all the comforts of home.
Yeah, and if you're a Spilled Milk listener, we bet that sometimes you want to cook when you travel, and Town Place Suites by Marriott has a Weber grill on the patio. They've got a microwave, dishwasher, stovetop, full-size refrigerator. You are good to go.
In other words, Town Place Suites by Marriott has all the amenities you need to feel at home during your stay.
Find the comforts of home at Town Place Suites. Go there with Marriott Bonvoy. This episode is brought to you by Masterclass.
Matthew, this weekend, I took a class from somebody who I bet you admire as much as I do.
Okay, let me see it. Let me see if I can guess who that is. Denzel Washington.
No, so close, though.
Okay.
Margaret Atwood.
Okay, yeah, very similar.
Yes. So Margaret Atwood, she has a series of 23 classes on Masterclass.
23 classes.
23 classes. And I only had time, honestly, to watch two of them. But one of the ones that I watched was about how she chose to write The Handmaid's Tale in first person, where she wrote Alias Grace from multiple points of view.
Wow.
And so it was so interesting to listen to her talk about like the feeling that she wanted the book to have and why a story should be told from this perspective or that one. Anyway, even though I'm a writer and I teach writing, I think this stuff would be fascinating even to people who just read the book. It was so great.
Yeah, I mean, Masterclass is for you if you're like me, a bit of a prima donna, and you're like, I want to learn something, but I only want to learn from the best. Mm-hmm. You go to Masterclass. You can learn to think like a boss with Martha Stewart. You can learn to shoot three-pointers with Steph Curry. Like, if you imagine the person who's best at the thing you want to learn, they are probably already on Masterclass teaching how to do it.
That is accurate. And plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So, like, zero risk here. If you are a lifelong learner, and we certainly hope you are,
if you're a lifelong learner, why are you listening to this show? Instead, head over to Masterclass for an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
That's masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
God, I'm glad we got that settled. Oh, man. Okay, yeah, let's move on the agenda here. The next category is how to buy.
How to buy.
Yes, how to buy furikake.
Okay, so if you go shopping for furikake, like, you can often find it, like, in the Asian ingredients aisle of a American supermarket. You can find it in any Japanese market and many non-Japanese Asian markets. And the most common brand you will find, which is made in China, is Ajishima Foods Norikomi Furikake. Mm. And when teenager of the show Iris was using some yesterday and said, oh yeah, this is the kind of furikake that everyone gets. It's the most popular brand. And it's,
you know,
super simple and good. Yes.
I think I bought it at, I had run out of the stuff I had brought back from Tokyo. And I think that I bought this brand recently at Central Market in northern Seattle. I could not get over the sweetness of it. Like, the sugar was really pronounced. And I was like, what the hell is this stuff? And I threw it away.
Okay, yeah. It's sesame, sugar, seaweed, salt, and preservatives.
It was markedly sweet compared to what I had had from Yagenburi.
Okay. Yeah, it is definitely sweet. I guess that doesn't bug me because I like it.
Okay. Okay. All right.
And one thing I like about it, this brand does have other varieties, like I suspect some of the fishier ones are less sweet, although I'm not sure. One thing I like about this is that it comes in a nice glass jar and the lid has a really big hole for shaking it. And I like anything where the packaging just says, you're going to use a lot of this. Like, we know this. Here's a big hole for you.
That's so interesting because the container that I bought at Yagenburi, which I keep my furikake in, has a really big hole on top. And I always feel like the hole is too big. So I wind up shaking the furikake into my hand and then sort of distributing it over my rice.
Well, and that's good because then you can like stick your tongue into the little pile on your hand and just eat some that way.
That's pretty fun.
That's
too.
What
Maybe
I do.
That's actually why I do it. Yeah, I always wondered why the hole was so big, but I really like your take on it, that you know, it's like, you're going to want a lot of this. Of course I am.
I mean, do you think there could be some other explanation for why the hole is big?
I don't know. I don't know. I haven't spent a lot of time considering the industrial design of these sprinkle seasoning containers.
Fair. Yeah, I'm going to like put a little in my hand and lick it up right now. Oh, that's kind of a lot.
All right. Mm. So do you have the norikomi?
I do.
Okay.
Oh, it's so good. It is. Yeah, it's sweet, but it's balanced with the saltiness. And now it is all over my hand and I can't reach the napkins.
So that's what your tongue is for.
I'm just going to lick the rest off like a cat.
Okay. Mm. All right. So, Matthew, what do you use it for at home? Like, what was teenager of the show Iris putting it on?
Oh, this was so great. I was yesterday sitting at the table. I think I was in a meeting for work and teenager of the show Iris brought over a freshly made onigiri rice ball that was wrapped in seaweed and then the exposed edge rolled in norikomi furikake. It was so great.
Oh, God. We made onigiri a couple of weeks ago. We made it with a little bit of salmon left over from the previous night's dinner. It was just... Honestly, it wasn't as good as what you can get in a convenience store in
Well,
Tokyo.
It never is, yeah.
But anyway, I've had on the sort of meal planning list ever since then a plan to make tuna onigiri with like tuna salad in the middle.
Oh, sure.
Oh, I'm so excited about it. I don't know why I haven't done it yet.
Oh,
but
yeah,
anyway, I don't know why I didn't think to bust out the furikake when we made the salmon ones. That sounds, oh, God. Iris, please come over and make a snack for me.
Yeah, now, to be fair, then I wanted another one, but Iris had eaten all of them, so all the rest of the rice. Yeah, so at home, like, I use it pretty much for putting on rice and onigiri, which is rice. So yeah. It really, you know, when we get into Hawaiian cuisine, we're going to talk about some other ways to use it. But fundamentally, it is made to be a friend of rice.
We tend to use it at home when we have, so if we have nothing else in the house, we always have rice, we always have eggs, we always have furikake, and then there's always some sort of vegetable kicking around that we can cut up raw or cooked. Mm-hmm. So Ash's father is South Korean. And so Ash grew up with, you know, with a rice cooker always filled with rice on the counter. So Ash particularly loves it when we have this meal. And they've gotten really into furikake too.
Awesome.
So, yeah. Anyway, but hold on. Wait. Can you make this stuff at home? Because what do I do when I run out of my supply if I don't want to buy the norikomi?
Okay. You can. And as usual, whenever we talk about a Japanese recipe, like the first place I always turn is the website justonecookbook.com.
I used her instructions to make my onigiri.
Oh, awesome. Mm-hmm. She has a recipe on the website for homemade furikake. And there are lots of other recipes available online, but I'm sure Nami's is great. And when you make homemade furikake, often you will use, and her recipe does call for this, kombu, seaweed, and katsuobushi, fish flakes, that have already been used for making dashi.
Ah.
And this is like thrifty on the one hand, which is great. And also it gives them a lighter texture because they've been kind of reconstituted and dried.
So this is interesting. So yeah, when I've made dashi, well, you know, you wind up with this like saturated, soggy, you know, kind of pile of fish flakes. It looks like paper pulp or something.
Yeah, it does.
And then your kombu is nice and soft. And so does she have you like lay these out on some sort of a screen
or
something? Yeah,
exactly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I've never done this. Like, I've always known that, and there are like lots of other things you can do with your used kombu and katsuobushi. Then I have never done any of these things, and like I know every Japanese grandma hates me for this, so I'm gonna give this a try.
This is very exciting. I had no idea. Okay, so we'll put up a link to the Just One Cookbook method for making homemade furikake in our show notes. I want to finally talk about Hawaii. Can we get on to this?
Yes, because one of the biggest uses for furikake worldwide now has become as a topping for poke.
And
that is like the most common use in Hawaiian cuisine, but there's so much more. So like poke, like, you know, it's a salad of raw fish and other stuff on top of rice. And furikake is almost always used as a topping or mix in.
Okay. I guess this is the part to reveal that I've actually never eaten poke.
Oh, okay. So here's the thing about poke. I don't think this is like a really hot take. I have had poke at some like, you know, poke restaurants that have popped up around Seattle back when that was a big craze maybe 4 years ago, right? And I thought it was fine. And what I ended up hearing over and over from people from Hawaii is like, this is not really how we do poke in Hawaii. In Hawaii, it's like more simpler and more intensely flavored. And I'm like, okay, that's what I'm missing.
Okay. I like this take because, yeah, when I see it, it always seems like, it does seem like it's been like dressed up for, you know, like a metropolitan American audience.
It's got a bad case of global pantry going on.
Yes, I get that. Okay, well, interesting. I wonder if we can find like a recipe from a Hawaiian author or a Hawaiian blog or something.
I think
for
we
how
can.
They would season their poke.
So there's a really good Hawaiian food blog called Feeding My Ohana, Ohana being Hawaiian for family. And there are a bunch of recipes on that site. And I mean, there's definitely a poke recipe, but also many other recipes involving furikake, including fish dishes, raw and cooked, salads. And I found on this blog and I thought, okay, this must be some great idea that this blogger came up with. And then was like, oh no, there are dozens and dozens of recipes for this, and is a huge thing in Hawaii, is furikake Chex Mix.
Yes. I love the thought of this. Have you tried it yet?
I have not tried it yet, but I am 100% going to try it. It's exactly okay. What it sounds like. It is Chex Mix made with furikake, and it has become like a standard dish in Hawaiian cuisine.
Oh my God. Okay. While we're sitting here, I'm going to click on the link that you provided in the agenda for the furikake Chex Mix, mm-hmm. because I am so excited to make this. I want to open it up on my browser.
Get some Chex up in here.
Yeah, man. Okay. That's so, I love the thought of this. I'm so excited. What else do we need to say about furikake? What, anything else you use it in?
Not really. There's one other thing I want to say about buying it, which is that it is a very popular gift item in Japan. Like, we mm-hmm. talked about how, like, shichimi togarashi is a good omiyage, like a gift that you get when you travel somewhere and then bring back to the people back home. Mm-hmm. Furikake also, because it can be used to highlight local ingredients, like, you know, here's the furikake that has, like, our local octopus that's, like, dried and crushed. And it's also very easy to package in an attractive way, and it is shelf-stable. So it is like the perfect thing for this type of gift. So you can buy like a set with five beautifully packaged packets of furikake that have colorful ingredients like, you know, red dried shrimp and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Dried red shiso powder is a popular furikake ingredient. It's called yukari.
Okay.
And so like if you go to Japan and you're looking for a gift to bring to someone in Japan or to bring to people back home, like a furikake assortment is perfect.
Nice.
And it's so easy to use because all you have to do is make some rice and put it on and it's going to be delicious.
Right. And it also, I imagine, keeps for a while too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I would love to have any of our listeners pipe up maybe on Facebook and let us know if they use furikake in any places that we have not already mentioned.
Yeah. Speaking of listeners piping up, remember we got into a thing about pipe organs a while back. We had a listener who asked us if we could come... who invited us to come and visit his pipe organ.
Yes.
And play a real pipe organ.
I love that you said visit his pipe organ as though it were a person or like like you'd go visit a relative in a like a nursing home or something.
Yeah,
like.
No, I think probably most organists think of their pipe organ as a person that just, it's like a person that you sit down at and like press on with your feet and hands.
It's a massage client.
It's a massage client, yes, that makes a lot of noises depending on how they're different noises depending on how they're massaged. But yeah, so like we sort of like got busy and forgot about that, and then now we can't go and visit anyone. But like once we're able to visit a local organist, I think we have to make a priority of doing this.
Oh my God, me too. I feel a little bit like teary-eyed at the thought of seeing you again and playing an organ with you.
Me too. It's all I've ever wanted.
Okay. Well, you know, Matthew, we should also mention that this episode is airing on the day of our event to talk about my new book. Yeah. So this evening, August 6th, you and I are both going to be speaking on a Zoom feed from one of our very favorite bookstores anywhere, Book Larder, here in Seattle. And we're going to be talking about my new book, which just came out 2 days ago, called The Fixed Stars. So it's going to be at 5 p.m. That's 5 p.m. Pacific time today, August 6th. So, you know, if you're listening to this episode promptly upon its release, you can come join us. Go to booklarder.com. I think you need to register and then they'll send you a Zoom link, but it's free. And we actually might wind up having like kind of a semi-serious conversation about some things.
Yeah, I've been wondering about that. Like, can we do that?
I don't know if we can do it, but I think that... I mean, are you wondering if we are capable of doing it or if we can have permission to do it?
Oh, I was wondering if we were capable of doing it. I was specifically wondering if I'm capable of doing it.
I think that, you know what, Matthew? I think it's going to be delightfully infused with some spilled milkage.
Okay. Yeah, it's going to be, I'm going to sprinkle my flakes of happiness over
it. Great. Okay. All right. Well, Matthew, I'll see you on Zoom tonight. And the rest of the world, I hope to see you on Zoom tonight, too.
Yeah. All right. You can find us at spilledmilkpodcast.com, a website where nothing... No, you can find the show notes. No, you can't even find the show notes there. A completely useless website. You can find us at facebook.com/spilledmilkpodcast, where we'd like to hear what you're doing with furikake.
Excellent. You can, you know, I know we've said it a million times, but you can leave us a review wherever you listen to this podcast. And if nothing else, I think there's some people out there who like reading reviews.
Exactly. Yeah. That is my hobby, is reading reviews of other people's podcasts.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Radio Lab. So many noises. 3 stars.
Great. That is, yes, Jad Abumrad, excellent host.
Uh-huh. But I
five,
hear...
five stars. No, I started the sentence, but I didn't know where I was going to go with it. And then things started to feel dangerous and loaded. Okay. So I evacuated. No, I like Jad Abumrad. I think that he is brilliant.
Oh, yeah. Great host. I like Robert Krulwich also.
He's like, gone now. He's not part of the show anymore.
I know. I haven't listened to it in a long time.
I know.
Probably because Robert Krulwich left. Okay, so Instagram at Spilled Milk Podcast. Wow, we've been signing off for a very long time.
Okay. Well, anyway, thank you for listening to Spilled Milk.
After listening to this show, you can dry it out and crumble it up and listen again.
That sounds great. All right, that's what I'm going to go do. I'm going to go do that.
To be fair, sometimes when we record remotely, that's what the audio ends up sounding like.
All right, well, I'm Molly Weisenberg.
And I'm Matthew Amster Burton. People say, hey, nice nabs.
Oh, jeez. I just read the part of the agenda that says shake and sprinkle.
Mm-hmm.
I shake and sprinkle my nabs.
Of course. Who doesn't?
Okay, I hope you're recording.
Oh, yes, I am.
Open the door to big savings with a brand new look with Larson Doors. Now at Menards. Whether you're looking for traditional, modern, or a screen door, Larson Storm Doors are perfect to enjoy the fresh spring air. They come in over 40 styles of storm doors to choose from. Check out all Larson Storm Door options in store and find more great deals in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.